Shalom and welcome to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast for Jewish Sacred Aging. I am your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and we welcome you to our series of podcasts that explore some of the implications of the longevity revolution for our congregations, our community, and our family. You can check us out at our website, jewishsacredaging.com. You can feel free to give me comments at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we invite you to like us on Facebook on the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. And it gives us great pleasure to welcome to today's podcast of Seekers of Meaning, Bianca Mays, the Health and Wellness Coordinator for Garden State Equality. Bianca, welcome. Welcome to Seekers of Meaning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. So people know we were trying to figure out some technological issues before we went on air. So, and I admitted that I'm computer stupid, and thankfully our producer, Steve, is a genius. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Public C. Welcome. Health and Wellness Coordinator for Garden State Equality. So could you tell me what Garden State Equality is?
Sure. So Garden State Equality is New Jersey's statewide advocacy and education organization for the LGBT community. So we are, I like to compare us a little bit to Planned Parenthood in the sense that we have a 501c3 and a 501c4. We do a lot of education. So there's my job, which is the health and wellness coordinator. We also have a safe schools coordinator, and she goes into the schools and educates administrators and students. We have a person in my organization that does a lot of policy work. So they might pass a few bills. They might be down in Trenton, New Jersey a lot. And we basically do different kinds of things in our organization on behalf of the LGBT community. So, you know, since I'm the health and wellness coordinator, most of what I do is in the healthcare space. We have different kinds of initiatives, including one called Pledge and Protect, which is specifically for spreading awareness of the unique needs and challenges of senior services, culturally competent healthcare, and senior housing programs for LGBT older adults. Because most of the people that know of my organization, you know, it's been around for a long time. It initially started for marriage equality, but then as marriage equality passed, they were saying, okay, so what can Garden State Equality do now? So now that they have a person like me in position, I really go to the healthcare providers or the older adult providers, and I teach them how to be more LGBT affirming towards the patients or the clients that they're going to have in the future because of the healthcare status. So that's a little bit about what we do.
If somebody wants to contact you, how does one do that? What's the website contact information?
Sure. So our website is pretty simple. It's just our name. It's www.gardenstateequality.org. Yep. And our contact information, we have actually two offices. So we have an office in Montclair, New Jersey, and we also have an office in Asbury Park, which is where majority of us work. So the phone number for the Asbury Park office is 973-509-5428. And we're actually located right on Main Street in Asbury Park.
But you cover the entire state. So for those of us who live in the wilds and the beautiful area of southern New Jersey, you know, that stuff below Trenton near Philly, you cover all of us down here too, right?
Of course. So that's part of why... That's part of what makes us pretty amazing. We are given the flexibility to go anywhere in the state of New Jersey, as long as it's relating to the LGBT community. We can travel.
Just as a point of information, are there other similar organizations in any of the other states?
Yes. So we do have affiliates that exist in different states, like California. We might have one in Florida. They basically exist, but they all have different names. So we might be Garden State Equality, there might be a California Equality, or they might use another name, but it's called the Equality Federation. So if you want to find out more about us, Google the Equality Federation and you'll see where in the United States we're actually located.
Okay, so let's dive into, you know, the purview of Seekers of Meaning is really to talk about, as we said in the intro, the impact of aging and longevity on our community, families, and specifically within the Jewish community, congregations. So we've talked in the past one or two times to some individuals who work locally, especially in the area of the LGBTQ community and aging. And this issue of housing, and you raised this one of the standards that you do as part of the health and wellness coordinator. Talk to us a little bit about what you see happening. There may be, and I don't know, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, a popular perception amongst some people that since the LGBTQ conversation has become more, quote, mainstream, unquote, that issues of aging may not be on the front burner. Yet, I'm led to believe by some contacts in the community and friends of mine who are aging, say, you know, you may not think about this in the straight community, but we have specific needs. We may have specific issues that rarely go addressed, especially if we will want to, you know, maintain residence in an assisted living facility, a CCRC, a continuing care retirement community, a skilled nursing, and we don't want to be away from our partner. From what I heard you say, this is part of your work. You work with facilities, nursing homes, CCRCs, et cetera, to orient the staff. Is that correct? And if so, walk me through how you do that.
Sure. So that absolutely is correct. You know, sometimes people think of the LGBT community and they think more towards youth-based programs and youth-based training. But we know we have all these LGBT older adults who are trying to age with respect and dignity. And what ends up happening is, you know, they apply for assisted living or skilled nursing, or they get a home health aide. And they find that those people that are more often older adult providers don't necessarily have the LGBT competency training. So what happens is when they interact with these doctors, these nurses, these physician assistants, or even the front end staff, they end up being discriminated against. Especially, we've heard of couples that try and they both apply for housing and they're told that they can't be in the same room because we don't want that here. So what my job is, I basically go in and I go to these facilities and I talk to all the providers. So it doesn't matter who it is. It could be the administration of the building. It could be the cleaning staff. It could be the front end staff, whoever will hear me talk. And I basically, one, teach them about the LGBT community, because a lot of people that work in older adult services aren't trained at all when it comes to the LGBT community. Even basic information like what is bisexual mean? They don't have that language. And then a part of my training is I teach them about some of the things that have historically happened to the LGBT community. Then I usually break off into the healthcare disparities that the LGBT older adults have specifically that might look a little different than the rest of the population. And then I always, at the end of my presentations, have a section on best practices for the facilities and, you know, as an organization and on an individual level as to how they can be more LGBT affirming. Because unfortunately, a lot of these providers, they get in their practice and they never had an LGBT Health 101 chapter. And they might have their own internal bias from their families, from religion, from the media, on based off of what the LGBT community even looks like. And now they're saying, okay, so I have this LGBT senior. I don't really like that. So I might discriminate against them. I might tell them that they can't live here, or I might throw out the pictures of their partner that's on the nightstand in the assisted living facility. So we are seeing a need, because people are going back into the closet because they feel, one, that the staff are going to treat them poorly, but also the residents, right? So if you're an LGBT older adult, and society as a whole has been discriminating against you for a really long time, and then you get put into a long-term care facility, those same people that were discriminating against you when you were younger and in the world are now there with you in a nursing home. So not only are they getting it from the staff, but they might be getting discriminated against by the other residents that are with them.
So what recourses a person have? Because, you know, you raise, just in that answer, you raise a ton of very meaningful and powerful, but very sadly, very real issues. I mean, not the least of which is the cultural and religious differences that you may run into staff in some of these facilities. What recourse if, and I'm sure you've dealt with this, and in Garden State Equality, I would assume has dealt with this, that somebody gives you a call and say, look, I'm in, you know, Shady Acres Nursing Home, and I'm really getting this vibe, and actually my partner hasn't been able to, you know, stay here, whatever. What recourse does a person have legally within the state of New Jersey?
So in the state of New Jersey, thankfully, we are one of those states where it's illegal to discriminate in public accommodations, which would include, you know, senior nursing homes based off of sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. So legally, they are protected there. So what would happen is, if they were being discriminated against, our website actually has a page where they can report discrimination. And then on the back end, it sends an email to my entire team. And it says, you know, this is the person's name, this is the person's situation, their contact information, and we will reach out to that person and take the appropriate action. Now, what that looks like sometimes is we will send, like, we'll draft a letter and we'll send it to the organization and saying, hey, this is the person we're advocating for. This is what we're advocating for them. Like, this is the situation. And then we'll say, this is the appropriate action. And one of the appropriate actions would be for us to come and train the entire facility. And our trainings are free, I should add. We train for free. So we would go in there and we would train everyone on staff to basically give them the tools that they need. And then we would help them implement changes, whether that's updating their intake forms, looking over their policy to make sure that it's more inclusive. But this would be, you would basically get a team of people from my organization. So if it was a LGBT adult senior, it would probably be me and my coworker, Aaron, who has his doctorate degree in policy. So between the two of us, we would basically advocate for the person, train the facility, and if legal action needed to be taken, we would definitely take the next steps going forward, because you're not allowed to discriminate here.
So this may be a very ignorant question, I apologize, but is there a difference in your approach and legal recourse between a public institution and a privately run facility? Is the recourse the same? And I raise the question, Bianca, only because of some recent court decisions which seem to indicate that I have a right to, in essence, refuse service to somebody because I don't agree with their sexual orientation, et cetera. Would this play out? I mean, if the difference between if somebody's calling you up for potential prejudicial action, whether it's a public facility that takes government money, et cetera, well, I guess everybody there with Medicare, but or a private institution. Is that clear?
Yes, or it's clear. It definitely would change the approach that we would have. You know, usually things that are private are usually harder to advocate for. It's like the hospitals that say that they don't perform certain services like abortion, because of their religious beliefs, because they are a private institution. We would have to approach it differently and take different steps based on the facility. That's where my coworker Aaron really comes into play. But because he has that policy background, he would understand the intricacies of going through the private organization or private institute's legal methods more than I would. Most of the time when I get into this situation, they are publicly accommodated. So most of the time it doesn't apply.
What's been the reaction of the facility and the staff? Anger? I mean, how dare you come in here and tell us what to do? Or we weren't even aware of this, or, oh my God, we apologize for this and we're going to work to, you know, rectify it, et cetera. What's been some of the reaction?
So I've actually had really, really mixed reactions. There's been times where I've gone in and I started my presentation and people have walked out. I've had people come up to me at the end and say, thank you for coming. I had no idea that the LGBT community even went through some of those things. Because what happens is we are in post-marriage equality America. And for a lot of people, they don't know, and we also don't learn this in history class either, that the LGBT community have been discriminated against for a really long time. They've been fired from their jobs. They've been, you know, hunted. They've been killed. They've been isolated from society. And a lot of people don't actually know that because they're like, oh, the LGBT community can get married now. Great. They don't remember the AIDS crisis in the 80s. So my historic piece is usually what makes or break people. So sometimes they're very overwhelmed because now they're trying to learn all these LGBT letters. But I always tell them the point is not to become an LGBT expert. It's just to give you basic information. And if you have follow-up questions, you can ask me. Like some people after I'm done, they are attacking me with different kinds of questions, thoughtful questions, but also, you know, controversial topics like, can you turn someone gay? Or is it appropriate to ask someone their gender pronouns? So I get a really, really mixed reaction, but I'm going to say most of the time, it's a positive one, which encourages me as I continue to, you know, do this journey and this work, because it's very, very specific for LGBT aging.
Oh no, it's holy work in many ways, because it's about saving people's lives and supporting people in their journey. And for some people, maybe their final journey, because marriage, equality has been exists in the state of New Jersey. Have you run into, what do you do now when a married couple, because of the usual circumstances, say they can't longer live independently and they have to seek residence in a facility. What's been your reaction when the married couple begins this journey with a facility, the same type of reaction, or is there a greater awareness and acceptance now in your experience of the married, a gay lesbian couple?
I'm going to say, I think people are still uncomfortable. They're not, even though we have marriage equality, I feel like people don't interact with LGBT couples as frequently as they do heterosexual couples, because sometimes people will ask me, do I treat the situation differently because it's an LGBT couple coming in? And I'm like, no, legally, the same thing you would do with a heterosexual couple is the same thing you would do with an LGBT couple. So I think a lot of times a lot of people think LGBT and they think young. They don't think older adult at all.
No, I mean, this is why this conversation is so valuable, because we know, and we've seen this in the work that I do in Jewish Sacred Aging, that boomers are aging and there's a significant population of baby boomers who are members of the LGBTQ community. And I once asked one of the advocates who works in this field in Philly, basically, you know, a similar type of question about, you know, well, why are you creating a specific, I think it was a residence assisted living or type facility. And there's one in Philly and there's a couple others around the country specifically geared to this community. And it was point blank. And he said, well, you have to understand that for so many years, people in our generation, we're shunned from our own families. You may have aunts, uncles, spouses, brothers, sisters, adult children who support you. For many members of our community, they've been turned away from their own family. And this sense of, as you were pointing out, increased or again, isolation in a very critical point and period in their lives is very, very powerful. So, how does Garden State Equality begin? Do you work with those individuals who reach this stage in their life and their own families still don't speak to them or you know, have rejected them?
Absolutely. So what we're finding is, and I can tell you briefly a little bit about the project that I just initiated. So because we are statewide and everyone in each county has their own needs, what I've been doing is I've been gathering small focus groups of about 6 to 8 LGBT older adults. And I sit down with them and I ask them a series of questions, including one saying, you know, are you isolated from your family? Are you isolated from the community? And what kind of programs or support are you looking for? Because I do still come across LGBT older adults that say, hey, my partner just died. You know, my family has isolated me. We didn't have any children before they died. And now I'm all alone and I don't know what to do. And there's plenty of people like that throughout the state.
And so you continue to work with these individuals. Do you do any, I'm sure you do, this is probably phrased wrongly, with family members who contact or are then brought in after perhaps years of not speaking, but all of a sudden they're made aware that brother or, you know, mom or dad or whatever is really, you know, health-wise and they need specific care. And all of a sudden they're made aware of that. Do you work with that family to sort of like, in essence, I guess for the want of a better term, reunite them or bring them back together again?
So I haven't had the opportunity to do that yet, but I would definitely, if someone did reach out to me for support and they wanted that, I would easily work with them to reunite them with their family, especially, you know, at the people are supposed to be able to age with respect and with dignity and be surrounded by people that they love. So if there was someone that reached out to me and said, Bianca, I need your help reaching out to my family. I want to reunite with them. Can you help me? I would absolutely welcome that opportunity. I'd be very honored if they asked.
Garden State Equality, you mentioned before at the top that part of the work of the organization is to work in policy. What legislative direction has been done here in the state of New Jersey that could be a model for other states as far as anti-bullying laws or, you know, laws to protect the individual? You've been involved with that in Trenton?
Not me personally, but my organization have been involved in that. So we have actually a few that just passed. We have the birth certificate bill and the death certificate bill that literally just passed, I think, last month. We have our bullying policy. We are basically trying to advocate for, like for schools, we're trying to advocate for a transgender policy for each school. So if they ever came across a transgender student, that policy would protect the student as well as give some kind of guidance as to what the school administration would have to do for that student, like letting them use the bathroom of the gender that they choose or participating on a sports team that, you know, reflects their gender identity.
New Jersey, and I live, as I said, down south, still has the, I think, appearance as one of the more liberal states in the country. The revolution, though, is far from over around the country, isn't it? I mean, despite marriage equality and some of the other issues of progress that seem to have been made, there's still a lot to be done, is there not? As far as real equality dealing with the LGBTQ community, correct or wrong?
No, you're absolutely correct. And I think, you know, given the political climate, I think hatred of any kind is more emboldened now. We're getting a lot more discrimination cases. People are noting that people aren't using their pronouns, or this person is being openly discriminated against when they visit the doctor, or, you know, organizations are turning people away because they feel emboldened by what's going on in our climate. It's become a lot harder. I would love to say that, you know, New Jersey is liberal all around, but I definitely think that there are certain patches inside of New Jersey that are less liberal than others. And sometimes those towns or those places in New Jersey have discriminatory acts, and someone reaches out to us to advocate for them.
So you must have, I do work with other organizations like Alzheimer's and stuff. They have hotlines if somebody comes. Does Garden State Equality, if somebody's listening to this and say, wait a minute, I'm dealing with this right now. I didn't know anything about this. I want to pick up the phone and call. Is there like a helpline or a hotline that people can call?
So we don't have a hotline. However, on our contact page, we do have the hotline numbers for other people. Like, example, we have a hotline for LGBT older adults that will push them forward to SAGE. We have an LGBT youth hotline, which will push them to the Trevor Project. Because we don't necessarily do direct services, there will be no one on hand 24/7 to handle that kind of call. And then we also have like a number on our website for a transgender hotline as well. And then we post if you're in immediate danger to call, you know, emergency services 911.
So I think, Bianca, that's very important. You just alluded to the way you're describing things. You know, you go into nursing homes, you do these trainings, etc. It's very much, it appears, direct service. But Garden State Equality is not a direct service organization. Am I correct that you are more educational policy
yes.
than direct? Okay, that's really important. So that people understand that, and that if they go to gardenstateequality.org, they will then have the hotlines if somebody needs direct service to call to implement that service. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we also have we have a project that we're working on called Map and Expand, where we're basically going to ask any kind of healthcare provider that offers services that is LGBT affirming to put their information on this website. So we do have a backend that will allow us to have a list of LGBT affirming people. So say if someone says, Bianca, I'm looking for an LGBT affirmative psychologist, we have a backend list that I'd be able to give them. Because we don't do direct services, but we do want to highlight where people can go for those services in New Jersey. So that's something we can do.
So let me ask you, before we start running out of time here on today's podcast, let me ask you, putting on my, which I never take off, the rabbi hat, dealing with the older adult population, regardless of orientation, but there is the spiritual component, the spiritual aspect of aging and growing older. Do you have contacts within the faith communities that if you run across someone who you're dealing with and they really need to speak to someone dealing with some of the spiritual questions of meaning, purpose, you know, mortality, etc., do you have those contacts to refer people to?
Absolutely, because for some people, spirituality is a part of their healthcare. So we definitely want to be able to provide people places where they can go to be uplifted. So we do have on the back end a list of organizations, different faith organizations that are LGBT affirming for people to go in case they contact me and say, Bianca, I'm a Christian. I have something I want to work out internally, spiritually. Where can I go? What kind of services can I attend? And they tell us where they live, and we'll be able to give them a list of different, you know, faith organizations that will work with them and welcome them.
Yes. You have them for the Jewish community?
Of course. I actually get invited sometimes to temple. I actually got to speak at a Pride Shabbat, and it was really, really nice. I did it in June. For some of the LGBT Jewish members that were at the temple that day.
Cool. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Be careful. You never know. Once again, give me the website and contact information for Garden State Equality.
Sure. So our website is www.gardenstateequality.org. Our phone number is 973-509-5428. And if you want to email us generally, you can email contact@gardenstateequality.org.
Because we were talking about this at the beginning and having some technical difficulties, the normal computer stuff, Garden State Equality gets involved or doesn't get involved with this increase in cyberbullying?
We definitely do get involved, especially when it comes to the youth. They seem to love using, you know, technology a lot more than other people. So my Safe Schools coordinator, she basically goes into the schools and we have presentations on cyberbullying. But if someone were to report to us, hey, my child's being discriminated against via cyberbullying because they're gay, we can advocate on their behalf as well and pull the school and have meetings with the school administration about cyberbullying, the tactics that they use.
Bianca Mays, Health and Wellness Coordinator for Garden State Equality, www.gardenstateequality.org. Lots of good information. Thank you. Thank you, Bianca, for giving us your time.
Thank you for having me.
No, listen, this is really important. And I wish you continued good luck and health, most important, in the sacredness of your work, because you're really doing great work for around the state of New Jersey. So thank you very much for being a guest today on today's edition of Seekers of Meaning. And just take care of yourself. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
To all of you, I want to thank you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast for Jewish Sacred Aging. And a reminder that you can contact me, Rabbi Address, at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. You can look at the website, jewishsacredaging.com, for more information, etc. We invite your contributions. If you'd like to write something for the website, we take contributions from people from literally all over the world. Again, you can like us on the Facebook page, the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. And if you'd like to sign up for any mailing list, you can do that on the homepage at jewishsacredaging.com. We want to thank you again for listening to us, for joining us today, and a big shout out to our producer, because these shows are produced at the studios of Lubetkin Global Media here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, with a thank you to our producer, Steve Lubetkin. To all of you, we look forward to greeting you again on the next edition of Seekers of Meaning. Take care, stay healthy, shalom.